You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome one and welcome all to the greatest show of them all. It is the NFC East Mixtape Volume 144. You can listen to this wherever you get your NFC East blog podcast across the SB Nation network. You can also watch us on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel or the Blog and the Boys YouTube channel, where you will see one Brandon Lee Gotten from Bleeding Green Nation drinking out of what I imagine is a Dunkin' Donut straw, not a partner or an ad, but just a literal truth. You will see myself drinking a juice from a local juice place. I'm RJ Cho from Blog and the Boys. BLG, I'm starting a juice. I wouldn't say cleanse, but I'm starting to maybe get into juice. We'll see how that goes in my life. How you doing?
What flavor is that?
This is, it's called Minty Grapefruit, and it features, I don't know, but I did pick it.
It's like a, how would you describe the color to the audio audience?
It's like a tangerine color. So maybe like that's what it, or like a grapefruit color. It obviously has the name grapefruit in it. She's a big juice person. I'm not, so I'm very excited to see, you know, what this journey has in store for me. How are you feeling? What with this being our last mixtape, that was going to be like a super dramatic thing. I was going to pause, but of 2023, this is the week where like, we're going to get the, like, this is the last, whatever, you know, of the year, which is technically and literally true.
Feels a little far away to me still. I know it's only, what, 5 days away, whatever, less than a week, but it still feels far to me for some reason. I guess the weird scheduling of Christmas lining up with and conflicting with NFL games kind of has me more focused on the games part than the reality of the year and what day it is. And for me, it feels like a Monday because the Eagles just played yesterday, so I'm kind of out of whack in that regard.
I'm very grateful for football, right? Like football, you know, in our case, puts roofs over our head, right? Football puts food on our table, puts juice, you know, in my hand, puts Dunkin' Donuts in your hand. But I'm good with football and holidays. Like this is not enjoyable. I love like the Thanksgiving thing for me. And I think most Cowboys fans would agree. It's just a kind of part of the holiday. Like you grow up experiencing it, but like having three games on Christmas was really overwhelming. And to your point, multiple times, and the Cowboys weren't even playing. I was just watching football. It felt like I doubted. I was like, is it Sunday? Like I legitimately questioned several times.
Yep.
And to your point, even today for us, which is Tuesday, I find myself in this weird lull of not understanding where we're at this point in time, which kind of feels like when you're a kid and you're on Christmas break and you don't know what day it is.
Right. Especially with the Saturday games mixed in there too. So three straight days of games. You're like, wait, today's Sunday? Which day is Sunday?
And we got another one in 2 days.
That's right.
A real barn burner with the Jets and Browns.
Wow. Thrilling. Yeah, it's, how was your Christmas, RJ? Did any good gifts for Roel Jr.?
I'm Roel Jr., just to be very clear.
Roel Jr. Jr.
That's where the J comes from. We got him a little barbecue pit, like a little plastic one, and he loved the food in it. It came with a burger that you kind of stack together and a hot dog and a jalapeno, because you obviously have to cook grill some veggies. But it came with this little like tomato slice, and that was his favorite part. Like not the burger, not the hot dog, not even the grill itself, just a little tomato.
A good tomato slice on a burger can be really nice. You know, a hot burger, the temperature contrast cools it down. Adds a little, especially if the burger's a bit drier too. You need something to kind of, you know, add some level of moisture in there.
That's true. Maybe that's what he was going for. He has a lot. He's into animals. He loves animals and like farm animals. So he's got a lot of farm animal toys. So all told, you know, when you've got a kid, that's kind of what Christmas is. I don't even remember what I got. I mean, I got some things and I'm very appreciative for them, but it's mostly like necessities. I ordered myself a new planner for 2024. And that's the thing I'm most excited about. If I'm being
honest. A planner, not a planter.
No. And I've adjusted. I actually used to be a desk calendar person. You know what I'm saying? Like you have the big flat thing. Now I'm flipping to becoming like a planner and notebook person. So I'm hoping that is a little bit, you know, better from an organizational standpoint. Did you get a planner? What did you get for Christmas? Did you get anything cool besides access to Dunkin' Donuts?
Every year my parents get me, it's kind of like a bit, like I've had an Eagles calendar, like literally since I was in a, whatever, 10, like just every year, it's just like consistent. It's funny because they wrap it too. So it's just like, oh, I wonder what that shape is again each year. But it's good. It's a good bit that we do each year. And it's funny too, because whoever makes the calendars isn't necessarily super keyed in to like which players in the Eagles are good necessarily, especially when the team is bad. And like there was one year where like Andre Dillard is on there when he's been like Jalen Reagor. Those are first round picks, so that at least makes a little sense. But there's like Jeff Mail was on there one time, who was, you know, like basically bottom of the roster receiver who never played. So it's kind of funny to me sometimes. This year is actually pretty good. It's like people who actually are good and play on the team. Like just for example, like Darius Slay is on here, Lane Johnson, Josh Sweat, Jordan Mailata, Hassan Reddick, Jalen Hurts, and so on. AJ Brown, Devontae Smith. It does lead off with Kenny Gainwell in January, so that's a little strange, but
I don't think that's strange at all. I think that that's pretty representative of who the Eagles are, and at least how they like to play. You're right. Like, I don't know when they make those things. It's generally, I would imagine, sometime in like the spring or summer in order to like mass
July,
produce them.
I think.
But so like next year will be the year that DeAndre Swift finally gets to be a part of it. You know what
it's
I'm saying?
Possible. Yeah. I don't know if they'll do that with the 1 year deal or whatever. We'll see.
We will see. Okay. Are we ready? How was your Christmas spread? What was the best thing you ate?
We didn't really do like a big Christmas spread. As I've said before, my mom's birthday is on Christmas. So, you know, it's not
happy
like
birthday, Mrs. G. Great job with the calendar.
Don't want my mom, you know, cooking, you know, don't want to, you know, that's not really fun to do on your birthday. So we kind of just went out to somewhere on Christmas Eve, got a nice little brunch. And then Christmas morning, you know, I had to go to the game. So, we just had a small breakfast at home, which was nice.
Okay. I had a crab mac and cheese. I can't remember if it's lobster. It's lobster mac and cheese that I told you I got from Sam's, and it slapped. I knew it would, and it did. That's one of the most satisfying things about food is when you believe something's going to be amazing, and then it actually is. What was your favorite thing about Christmas, mixologist? You can let us know with the hashtag.
That's right.
Christmas mix. That's the hashtag that we're going to go with. Final thing, I guess before we start, you told me not to spoil the Survivor finale for you because you were, we're going to wait to watch it till Friday. I think I want to be respectful for anyone who hasn't seen it for whatever reason. It was a holiday weekend, you know, people were busy. So just your non-spoiler thoughts on Survivor season 45.
I thought it was a good season. I usually do. I think the winner was justified. I'll say that much. I think it made sense and it was a good season.
I think that that's really well said. I think relative to like how I think we all felt going into the finale, it was pretty chalk. Maybe not like from a season long standpoint, but relative to that point. By the way, I have never seen Jeff Probst roast a single Survivor contestant the way he did throughout the finale. That was an interesting choice. When he showed a proper but high level of support for a different contestant earlier in the season in a similar sort of situation. So kind of strange.
Jeff's been a little bit crankier lately, especially if you listen to his podcast and how he's been ripping on the Survivor casting assisting services. He's kind of needlessly aggressive, I would say.
Well, Jeff, come on over here and tell us your thoughts, because I'm sure that they're aggressive with regards.
But
to
we still, yeah, we still love Jeff Probst.
Oh, obviously. I think the best host in the game though is Phil from The Amazing Race. He's the best.
Interesting.
He's the kindest. He's the most heartwarming. But anyway, let's start where we always do, which is the top of the NFC East order, the Philadelphia Eagles, who played one day ago for us, 2 days ago for the listener. I was told, Brandon, that it would be easy to blow out the New York Giants. The blowing out the Giants was not an impressive feat. But nevertheless, the Giants and Tyrod Taylor, in a bit of a surprise twist, maybe not a surprise, depending on how you feel about them, but took the Eagles to the distance, I think is not an uncharacteristic way to put this. 33-25, the final score. Philly stops the three-game losing streak. There are I guess what, like 80,000 offensive coordinators in Philadelphia right now who were all chanting at Brian Johnson on Sunday afternoon. Your thoughts on the Eagles and where they're at this moment?
I disagree with that characterization. I don't think the Giants took the Eagles to the distance. I think the Eagles took themselves to the distance because, I mean...
Well, say it however you want. I mean, you get my point, but I agree with you.
I'm just saying, like, I'm criticizing them for... It should have been a feel-good win. Should have been a get-right game. You're driving up 17-3, 14-3, late in the first half there, late in the second quarter. Okay, you're getting into like red zone, field goal kind of territory. Kenny Gainwell run, fumbles out of bounds. Nick Sirianni doesn't realize that the clock is still running. Let's like 19 or so seconds go off the clock. Could have called, I believe it would have been the Eagles' second timeout at 50 seconds left. So, you know, plenty of time still to do whatever you want to do, throw into the end zone. Instead, 19 seconds gone. Okay, that's not good. Still can salvage it. Jalen Hurts takes off running. And somehow doesn't get out of bounds with the Eagles having no timeouts left. And the Eagles were fortunate that Bobby Okereke held on to the ball on the ground. And I do think that was a legitimate defensive delay of game penalty because some people were like questioning that. I think the broadcast didn't show as well. Being in the stadium in person, the ref was literally right there and like also trying to get the ball. And Jason Kelsey was like trying to rip the ball away from him on the ground and he wouldn't give it up. So, like, the ref's going to call it at that point because, like, it was pretty egregiously not letting go of the ball there to prevent it from being spotted. So I do think it was a fair penalty, but, you know, you can't count on that. It's a terrible play by Jalen Hurts to not get out of bounds there and at least give the Eagles probably, you know, if he's able to get out of bounds, they probably can at least throw it into the end zone, like, one more time and have a shot at a touchdown there. Instead, you kick the field goal. Like, okay, that's bad, but whatever. You're up 20. Or well, I'm losing track of the score. It would be up 17-3 at that point.
It was whatever. 20-3 at halftime.
Okay, 20-3. Yes. Okay, so you would have been up 20-3. You're up 23. That's fine. And you get the ball back to begin.
You're up 17 points. I think that's where you were getting confused.
Yes. Okay. You're up 17 points, and you get the ball back to start the third quarter. So like, okay, you know, another opportunity to really get even more points. Probably end the game at that point. Take some clock off. Take some time off the clock. Instead, Boston Scott runs into Alameda Zacchaeus and fumbles, and the Giants get a touchdown. And then ultimately, after that, Giants pull within two after a pick six, once again, when the Eagles were driving. So it was a two-point game. And it's just like, this shouldn't be a two-point game. Like, you were dominating this team. Giants couldn't do anything. Couldn't stop you. Couldn't get anything going on offense. It's a two-point game. And ultimately, obviously, the Eagles find a way to win because they go up they go up two scores again. Although they then allow the only thing you can't do in that situation. It's like, okay, if you allow the Giants to have a long drive where time is taken off the clock, not ideal, but that's fine. The only thing you can't do there is allow them to score quickly over the top in 42 seconds. And that's what they do. And again, Eagles ultimately put it away, but for the Giants to have a chance, even at the final play of the game to not win, obviously in regulation, but tie it up with a touchdown 2-point conversion. It's just, why? Like, it's just so stupid. The team played such a dumb brand of football. And I think that starts with your boy, Nick Sirianni. Like, there were so many dumb mistakes across the board. They can't just be about, you know, one player making a dumb mistake. No, it's like across the board. It's the Eagles, I know I'm going long here. Here's what I'll say about that performance. They looked like a poorly coached team.
I saw you tweeting about this and like saying Sirianni deserves more criticism. It can't just be.
Yeah, I'm so sick. Sorry, I'm just so sick of like Brian Johnson sucks. Like, you're missing the forest for the trees here. The problem starts at the top. It's not just about like, hey, we flip the switch at coordinator and all the issues are solved. No, this is like a top level issue.
I mean, I think you can always ultimately point everything back to the head coach, which is like, you know, kind of like the proverbial ism. But like, okay, even if the coordinator sucks, right? Like, even if you want to like die on that hill, who hired him? Like, who made that decision? Like, you know, like whose choice was this to go down this road?
Exactly.
And like whose choice again, even if it's, I saw somebody tweet and I don't remember who it was. It was, you know how it could be like, there's just chaos on your timeline. Like, I feel like Matt Patricia might be the most like stable part of the like Eagles coaching operation right now, which is, you know, kind of strange. Like, certainly
I don't
not
know. It's hard to tell because they're playing bad offenses right now.
He has the least like muck around him. You know, like everybody has, and maybe that's just like longstanding problems with Brian Johnson or whatever. But the thing I think is dumb, and this isn't an Eagles fan base thing, but like when people be like, when a good play happens, they're like, yeah, there you go, Brian Johnson. Like now you're calling, like it's almost like he's purposefully calling bad things, you know what I mean? And just avoiding the good plays or whatever. I thought that this game was encapsulated very well by Jimmy Kimski, obviously of BGN radio fame. He tweeted out right after the game, the Eagles won a football game, comma, which I read as like kind of a dramatic effect, which is better than losing a football game, comma. Sure. But, and then instead of like any kind of words, it was the like yikes emoji. They're like
grimace.
Yeah. They're like, ugh. And I think that's like, I don't know. Like, I think you would agree, especially now, based on everything we've seen in the 3-game losing streak, obviously kind of highlighted this. And you talked about last week, how the Eagles were frauds and blah, blah, blah. I think that the grimace emoji was somewhat prevalent among Eagles fans prior to the 3-game losing streak. It was like, hey, a win is a win. A win is a win. A win is a win. I don't see that energy here. I mean, this just feels not even like a moral loss. It just feels like, okay, you won a game, but you're going to get smoked in the playoffs. At least that's my assessment of how Eagles fans feel about this team. I'm not declaring that to be the truth.
Let's just take the fans out of it for a second and take us out of it. What we say, as much as we want you to keep listening and everything, doesn't really matter. Look at the players. Look at how they're reacting to it. Look how Devontae Smith after the game is like, we have 11 wins. I'm not happy. And that's not just like a one-off comment. That kind of encapsulates the vibe of the team. The vibes with the team are bad. There was that Jeff McLean podcast slash report from last week about how the Eagles are like the most miserable 10-3 team ever at the time. 10-1. Yeah, a team ever. I mean, still applies to 10-3. But yes, at 10-1. And like, that's clearly not just if you want to be like, well, the team is actually fine. It's, you know, just a lot of criticism. The vibes are harsh, which I kind of felt that way at first. I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, but they're not even willing to give themselves the benefit of the doubt. They're clearly not happy. AJ Brown's refusing to talk after the game.
Yeah.
Hassan Reddick and Nick Sirianni and people are like yelling at each other on the sideline after the game. Like the vibes are clearly off here. And that's another thing on Sirianni. Like part of his job is to foster good vibes. I think he's done that in the past too, but right now that's not happening. And again, this is a top level issue. It's not just about a couple unhappy players. It's not like, obviously AJ Brown's an emotional player, but it's not just like it's him that's the only issue. It's Devontae Smith. It's everyone. Like there's a lot of players here who just, they don't, there was apparently, I just saw this today on Tuesday morning from ESPN's Tim McManus, the Eagles had the dreaded players only meeting last week. Before the Giants game. So the vibes are just clearly off with this team.
There was the Jalen Hurts comment a week ago after the Seahawks loss about, I'm paraphrasing, but like questioning commitment or whatever it was. And then he was asked, correct me if I'm wrong, after this game about the crowd chanting to run the ball. Mm-hmm. And I know you mentioned last week that he can be a little bit terse sometimes in those moments.
Needlessly so, yes.
And so he was asked about the chanting and he was like, again, paraphrasing, that was kind of unnecessary. They're supposed to get loud for the defense, not the like that. Right. Again, I'm not trying to like stir the pot or anything, but that feels like a shut the hell up. Yeah, again, like again, grossly exaggerating here, but like be quiet. Like let us figure this out. Y'all are just being ridiculous or unfair or whatever the case may be.
And it's not like he's wrong in terms of obviously like literally the crowd is not supposed to get loud for the team's offense. You're right. Like that's true, but also, maybe don't take on the fans.
That's a better way to put it. Like, it does feel like taking on the fans or taking a stand against like the like crowd fan petition to run the ball. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Although I do agree with those chants can be misguided. I think some of them were happening. It was like 2nd and 20. Really, you want to run the ball on 2nd and 20? Like that's how you're going to get a first down. So like some of that was silly and misplaced, and it wasn't like the issue with the team. And I'm so tired of that as a general criticism. Like I saw that last night just when the 49ers lost. It was like 49ers, they passed more than they ran the ball. Yeah. That's why they lost. No, that's not why they lost the game. That is a symptom. It's not the cause of them losing. It's so dumb. It's just like there's no football discussion somehow has not evolved past the point of just like run the ball equal win. That's not how it works.
I agree that the vibes are pretty off. Everything feels really difficult. I mean, everything feels like it's requiring all amounts of energy, which is obviously an exhausting thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know I don't know how to like summarize it, whether it's, you know, the expectation, whether it's a self-induced expectation. Obviously, you know, I've charged Nick Sirianni with a lot of responsibility for that. And there is something to like, yeah, hold yourself to a high standard, but he has like, he has made them into this like pariah of expectation. And if they fall short of it, he, again, he has kind of set them up to really take it on from whoever. On the Hurts thing, I, again, not trying to be critical in a funny way, but like, man, like he is not a functional quarterback in the NFL right now. He did have the 3rd and 20 play, which that was the best play and the most like quarterback he has played in a very long, I would argue we've talked about this before since the Zacchaeus touchdown against Buffalo. I mean, like, but other than that, I mean, it is the same old thing. It is just bail, buy time, mm-hmm. run, get yourself into tush push territory, whatever. Like, he is not a, I'll say he's not a functional passer right now in the NFL. Like, I would have zero fear of him as a passer other than just putting the ball within the radius of AJ Brown's massive wingspan.
Yeah, the discourse about Hurts after the game has been kind of interesting just to see. Like, I see people, like, you know, frustrated with him. I see people being like, actually, a really good game. The interception isn't on him. That's true. Dallas Goedert slips and falls. At the same time, the play right before that, Jalen Hurts almost did throw a pick. And it was because he, like, threw behind AJ Brown on that play. It's like, it's because he made a bad throw that the ball wasn't picked off. If the ball were, it was a better throw to where, like, in theory should have been, it would have been picked off. So that's not like a good play by Jalen Hurts. It's just he got fortunate there, and that's kind of in a micro, that's like two different plays there. Okay, the first play he got away with not throwing a pick, the second one a bad thing happened. So like, is it totally undeserved? It's not like he wasn't putting the ball in harm's way at all. So I think you have to acknowledge that. The 3rd and 20 throw was legitimately awesome, and it was weird to me because the angle from I viewed it in at the stadium, it looked like it was going to be a pick because he's throwing it right to where a Giants defender is underneath, but just the pass somehow just over the outstretched arm of that defender. So really electric throw, and ultimately at the end of the day did the right things. But that the situational awareness play, again going back to that, the end of the first half, like that's not like a one-off play. I think there's been times with Hurts throughout his career and the season where it's just like he doesn't have that like 1000 IQ, and look, this is a high standard to hold him to be clear, but he doesn't have like that, you know, Mahomes or Rodgers kind of like, you know, like exceptional situational like, awareness kind of thing.
I wouldn't even call it awareness, I would call it instinct, you know what I mean? Like instinct. There is just a natural and I would argue, I think we both liked this about him before, like Russell Wilson had that like early in his career. He seemed to always kind of have the right feel for the moment. I don't know that Hurts ever had that. If it was just a matter of like the Eagles were bludgeoning teams so badly last year that like it never truly came into play. And again, he had a great game in the Super Bowl, but I think it's more than fair to doubt him. I don't know that it's fair to doubt the contract because I feel like it was the right move, but I do understand how, with regards to Eagles fans, those Carson Wentz scars have like sort of barely healed over almost. And it does kind of feel like a similar pattern, right? Like this amazing year, you know, the Super Bowl berth, obviously in that case a victory that granted Carson wasn't a part of specifically in terms of the game, parlayed into a big time early, you know, contract for the quarterback. And then the play that makes you wonder if it's falling apart, the vibes around him not being great. I think we would have thought like there's nothing at all, you know, that you can correlate between Wentz and Hurts from like a individual leadership standpoint, but like mm-hmm. the vibes or whatever are maybe not Wentz level bad, but like they're not great with Hurts specifically and individually right now.
Yeah, there was a report last week about how there's like internal concern about Hurts's like leadership in terms of like being a little too stoic. I mean, that's part of just who he is. I'm not thinking he's being inauthentic, but and I don't know exactly what they want different, but maybe it's a little about having a little bit more, you know, like fire, passion. A little bit more, yeah, passion when the team. But I think that's Hurts, though. I mean, that's part of the upside of that stoicism is that when things are like, he's trying to be steady. I think it's fair to wonder, okay, is there a time where there is a little more fire needed at a certain point? And I think that's, you know, fair to wonder. I don't think that's the biggest issue, though. I don't think that's like making or breaking his career here. I do think it's not even just about Wentz. It's also like going back to Nick Foles. It's like, you know, you have this quarterback who is playing awesome, young quarterback playing awesome, looks like the guy, and then
the first goal, you're saying,
Yeah, for, obviously, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. When,
well, I mean,
when,
for like non-Eagles right. fans, I think yeah, that's not important
the, yes, before Wentz. So, you know, it's kind of been that pattern of quarterbacks who look like their guy might not be the guy. I still think, you know, Hurts is big picture. I'm not really super worried about him long-term. I think he's kind of having a step back year after last year. And he's a lot younger than Wentz, and I believe probably Foles was at the time. He's actually, I don't know if you know this, the same age as Tommy DeVito. I think they were born on the same day. So, you know,
that's crazy.
Go figure. Yeah, but that puts it in perspective. Like, Tommy DeVito's a rookie. Think about that. And here Hurts is in year four. So, you know, you're expecting to see things better. I think he's definitely a fair target of criticism, but I don't think he is, you know, it's not DOA. It's not like, oh, he's definitely not the guy. But there are more questions than there should be.
DOA is literally on arrival. Like, it's too late to be termed DOA. I mean, I don't think you're
using that. I don't think he's playing like a $51 million quarterback right now is the way I'd simplify it.
I don't think anyone would disagree with you right now. Are we ready to move on to the Cowboys?
Yeah, I guess we'll get into the playoff outlook.
Yeah, my thought, we didn't workshop this for the listener, but like, I mean, the Giants were mathematically eliminated from the playoffs with this game. So like, this is obviously all about the Eagles and Cowboys. So let's get to the Cowboys and their game, and then we can kind of unpack the playoff-ness of it all. The Cowboys fell on Sunday against the Dolphins on Christmas Eve. Because again, time feels weird right now.
Who made that their lock of the week for the SB Nation NFL show?
I mentioned this on the SB Nation NFL show. I want to start tracking the teams we're locking because I feel like we all know that you are obsessed with the Cowboys and you care
that
about
didn't
them
apply.
More than the Eagles.
I
know
apply.
It, but you either lock them or lock it. You've locked them up more times than I have this season, and you lock against them in games that you're generally not. So it's really just the
and
Cowboys
right
and their kind of presence in the NFL and then the Eagles for you. But anyway, you did correctly lock them up. So kudos to you. Our same game parlay failed, which is unfortunate, but you know, we had that little run and maybe that was the moment, you know, that's okay. But anyway, 22-20 was the final score. The Dolphins only reached the end zone one time in this game, which was,
so it's not Dan Quinn. Can't be Dan Quinn this time.
Look, I mean, I know you've been very busy and it's the holiday, but like, if you've paid attention to my post game show or any of our, you know, listeners or viewers or whatever have, if you read my stock report, I acknowledge that I have been very hard on Dan Quinn. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, unfairly so, but that they really bounced back. And I wrote and I told you about how I was so interested to kind of watch how he approached this game because it was kind of a baby Shanahan sort of opportunity, see how you could handle all of the motion. And it wasn't just that they, you know, limited the Dolphins to mostly field goals. I mean, these were some long field goals. I mean, you know, these weren't like, yeah, oh man, you just stopped them at the 20 yard line right, or whatever. Like, you know, there were several beyond the arc, you know, field goals in this game.
There's like a 57 in there, 54.
Yeah,
right?
Sometimes that's just what it takes from your team to win, and the Dolphins got that, obviously. So, I mean, all credit in the world to Dan Quinn. I know that they bent on the final possession of the game, but I they lost, and that sucks. But like, I don't hold that against them. Like, they more than did their job in this game. And in a weird way, the offense was like moderately good. They just missed, you know, the way I termed it was, I feel like they played great for the first 15% of the game and the final 20%, obviously getting the go-ahead touchdown to Brandon Cooks. But I mean, that middle, you know, 65% is significant. Like, you know, like, and they, you know, if you look at like their possessions and things like that, yeah, they scored and they were cashing it with field goals. But on a day where your defense was standing tall and holding the Dolphins to these long field goals or field goals in general, you had to do more. You had to mount a lead. The fumble on the first possession was really unfortunate. But a play that I think is getting a little overlooked is the Tony Pollard non-touchdown, the play right before. I've never seen that before. Like, it was a great tackle, but it was almost like literally every part of Pollard got into the end zone except for the ball. You know what I mean? It was crazy. So, you know, I hate to call it a bad break because it was a great tackle, but I mean, that was a weird thing. And then the fumble. And I know it's easy to say if they score that touchdown, then they have enough points to win, or at least, you know, not be in surrender a field goal and lose territory at the end. And maybe that's true. But Vic Fangio is obviously powerful and great defensive mind. I think he called a great game for Miami. And so it wasn't as concerning of a loss as the Bills game was, because it did feel like they lived up to the challenge in some ways. And it was really great to see, you know, the offense obviously come together and thrive on a massive long, you know, possession to go take the lead at the very end of the game. And I do think this is all an if, obviously, and a hypothetical now, but if they had done that and if they had won, given what happened on Monday night, you know, with San Francisco, I think Dak might be, you know, right behind Lamar in the MVP discussion. But it didn't happen, and they lost, and so he's not. That's just, you know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of moment people look for, is like that one drive, that signature kind of sequence of events. So, yeah, I'm not concerned in like an overall sense, and we'll get to the playoff picture, and I'll kind of explain why. I feel like Dak played okay. I had him as a stock down. And I go through this, if you're unaware, in our postgame show, and I got a lot of pushback for this. I got a lot of pushback from like, man, Dak played really well. And I agree that he kept, you know, the team alive and kept a lot of drives alive that otherwise wouldn't have been. But I mean, he's not a $51 million man, at least not yet.
Right.
You've got to do more. Like, you know,
you put up 20 points. That's not good enough.
I mean, against the Dolphins? Like, I think it was quote unquote like good enough, like relatively speaking, but like you had to be great. You know what I mean? Like, that's the point you're at in the year where good enough isn't good enough, if that makes sense.
Well, if anyone said the Cowboys are only going to score 20 points and you're going into a game against the Dolphins, people were probably like, it's probably not enough points because the Dolphins can kind of score a ton. So, yeah, I definitely think they fell short in that regard. And on the, you know, flip side, if you're like, hey, Dolphins will only get 22 points in this game, I think a lot of Cowboys fans would have signed up for that going into the game because, again, that is the expectation that, you know, they're going to score. They're not going to be shut out. So it is a game of inches in terms of Luke Schoonmaker not getting that touchdown against the Eagles. And obviously Cowboys messing up on that first drive, a drive in which, uncharacteristically for most NFL teams, Cowboys actually decided to receive the ball on the coin toss instead of deferring, which
that's becoming more of the norm for them. I don't know if you realize that.
No,
you know, there's a thought that they're better playing from ahead. That was kind of diagnosed by Greg Olsen during the Bills game. Because if you're like Buffalo was, if you're able to get up on them early, you know, defensively, they're not built for that. You know, they're not built for you to just run down their throats, you know, with the size they have in the middle of the defense. And
makes it so demoralizing, though, when you don't score there. Like,
it does. Like
the 10-point swing, you know, it's like, okay, you failed to get a touchdown. The Dolphins go down and they get a field goal. Like, 10-point swing to start the game is kind of a huge deal in terms of momentum and feel and all of that. So that wasn't great for them. But, yeah, I mean, look, the fact remains that I mean, this is the biggest issue, obviously, not breaking news. I know that, but they can't win on the road, or they're just not this. They can't win. They're not the same team on the road. Their road wins this year have been over what? The Panthers, the Chargers, and who else?
The Giants.
So, like, right. You know, it's like, okay, not very clearly non-playoff teams, all teams that are eliminated right currently in week 16 here. So that's been a huge issue for them. And not only has it
Say the Chargers? Sorry, the Chargers. Okay, sorry.
Not only an issue for them in terms of like right now, it's like this is going to be the thing in the playoffs, not only having to play on the road, but also successively. I think that's a big thing that I know Jimmy Kemsky has been talking about. If the Cowboys, you know, assuming they don't win the East here, which they're still alive, we'll see. But assume if what's in the scenario where they don't, they're going to have to play what, 6 out of 7 games on the road? That's really tough. Like we talk about all the time about, you know, having to play that 3 straight road games, and that third road game is almost always a loss or like a really tough game. 6 out of 7 on the road is like a really tough thing.
I want to get to the road thing when we talk about the playoffs, and I don't have like a point, but I have like a point to raise that I would like to kind of kick back and forth. So if you don't mind, I'd like to put a bookmark in that just for the moment, because I want to wrap up the discussion on this game and then we can kind of get to that. I think the biggest take is like, why are you like, CeeDee Lamb went forever in this game without being involved, which is so stupid. Like, what are you doing? Actually, right as we're recording this, friend of Blog on the Boys, Bobby Belt from 105 Through the Fan, tweeted this out, broken down really nicely. Against the Dolphins, drives for the Cowboys with a touch or target for CeeDee Lamb. There were 4 of them. Only 4 drives. Think about that, where CeeDee Lamb touches the ball. That's or even is even targeted on a pass.
How many drives were there in the game?
Nine. Yeah, so there were 5. So more than half the time, you're not involving him at all. But whatever. So on drives,
I mean, the Dolphins do have good quarterbacks. Sometimes.
Sure. Drives with a touch or target for CeeDee Lamb. 4 drives, 45 plays, 277 yards, 17 points. 17 of their 20 points. Drives without, 5, obviously 5 of them, 18 plays. Obviously, you know, you're not moving the ball a lot. 66 yards. 66 yards on 5 drives and only 3 points. I mean, like, it's just, you know, you have to be obsessed with getting him the ball. Like, it's clear and obvious that he is such a difference maker. Like, and you know, for the longest time, their only touchdown was a 49-yard touchdown from CeeDee. It wasn't even like a, you know, a long drive they put together. It was literally one where CeeDee Lamb did half of the work. I mean, I don't mean to take away from everybody, but you get my point. You cannot wait till the second half to get Jake Ferguson involved. Like, that's, you know, those are the little things that I think, you know, teams take away, but you have to find a way to kind of power through and win with, because the run game wasn't there. Dak was under duress. I mean, it can't just be like, oh, they took CeeDee Lamb away, so like we were stuck.
Yeah, I mean, teams want the ball to go to anyone else, but like, that's a win. When a defense is seeing the ball go to someone that's not CeeDee Lamb, they're very thankful for that.
Okay, let's take a break, and then I want to get to the kind of overall playoff discussion. So, Brandon, throw us to break. Like, throw it like a really hard throw to break. That's a wind up, not a throw.
Well, I have to reel the line in to cast it back out.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. Brandon's reeling us back in from the break. Do you like to fish?
Kind of boring for me.
What's your favorite seafood meal?
It's a good question. I feel like I have an answer, and I'm trying to make sure it's the right one. I'm not forgetting it. My inclination is to go with... Am I forgetting something? What's in my head, first thing, is catfish. I do like a good catfish. Catfish po' boy? I mean, that's a fantastic time.
That's great. I am a fan of like a lobster taco. You do it the right way. You put the right kind of slaw underneath. Like, that can be really solid. It's kind of hard to mess up shrimp. And shrimp is pretty versatile. You can, you know, put it in pasta. You can put it in tacos. You can eat it by itself. You've got coconut shrimp if you know, sweet is more your taste. Yeah. What is your favorite seafood meal, mixologist? Let us know with the hashtag C, but SEA mix. That's what we want to go with.
Hashtag, I think you should do NFC mixtape, but it's hashtag NFSEA and then mixtape.
Like Seattle, like the team that beat the Seahawks. NFC, I mean, they beat the Eagles recently.
I messed it up. NFC East mixtape, but you have to spell out this the letter C as SEA.
But the E and A need to be like the middle of the Venn diagram for East. Is that what you're saying? Like NFSEAST. NF ceased.
Oh, okay. You could do that.
Yeah. Any one of those. It's up to you.
Anyone.
It's fine. Okay. All due respect, except not really, to the New York Giants and Washington Commanders. They've been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. The
Eagles knocked them out, baby. Now. The season's over.
By the way, you mentioned locks of the week. My lock of the week was the Commanders, which was looking really bad, like early on, but they covered. So it hit. Congratulations to me. I mean,
I feel like we were both right and both wrong at the same time. You were ultimately obviously most right, but.
I was ultimately the only one who was right, just to be clear. I locked them up.
I mean, you and Steven, in terms of predicting that game, you were pretty confident in the Commanders.
What do you mean, Steven? Steven took the Jets, too. You both ridiculed me for taking the Commanders.
Oh, I thought he took the Commanders, too.
No, shows how much you listen to us when we talk. But okay, so this is as of Tuesday about lunchtime. Odds to win the NFC East.
Well, I do want to touch on the Giants Commanders just a little bit. I think it's worth noting that DeVito, not a real thing, you know, benched pretty unceremoniously.
I have a friend who was like a lot of people kind of like, you know, done with the like the stuff, you know what I mean? Like, because it was like becoming a craze and stuff. And my whole take at that time was like, dude, let the 15 minutes ride itself out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is clearly not going to be forever. Like, I hope he's able to turn this into whatever he wants, you know, in the future, just individually. Yeah, this was a tough scene. Like on Christmas, you know what I mean? Like the night that they beat the Packers with his like agent and was it his father in the crowd? Like that feels like forever ago at this point.
It is worth it in terms of like it was such a miserable season, as we've talked about, from the Giants literally being down 40-0 in the first game and never at any point like looking like, okay, you know, maybe they can do something, even like a little bit of a false hope. So they did have the DeVito moment, and I think there's something to be said for that in a miserable season. Like, at least you had a little bit of fun. But currently they actually are fifth overall in the draft order, so maybe they will get a top five pick depending on what happens here to close out the year. But that's all I wanted to say about the Giants, really.
I have one Giants thing, actually, so I'm glad you brought this up. Apologies for being upset with you. You mentioned the end of the first half sequence for the Eagles, like totally fair to like drag and roast the Eagles for that. I don't know if Darren Waller got like hurt or what the situation was. Obviously, as the Eagles were trying to tie it up at the very end, you've got to know. Like, you've got to get off the field. Like, you cannot waste that much time. Like, I mean, he clearly was banged up. So I'm not trying to be like, oh, like, don't deal with the pain. Like, that is obviously like an impossible thing to say and to claim. But like, everyone has to be on the same page. Like, hey, if we complete this pass, the number one goal is to just get up and spike it. And then we can tend to whatever we have to tend to. But like that, I feel like I believed in a little bit of this trade because it didn't require a lot. What was it, a fourth round pick? Like, I never thought that was like a massive price to pay. He has been so bad for them. And just aside from that moment, that was actually a great catch. But like, I mean, I don't remember his total stat line in this game off the top of my head. I have it right here, actually. So he had to have like six targets in this game. I was off. Five targets, two catches for 32 yards. And one of them was that 20-yard reception. Like, the return on investment, even as moderately low as the investment was, has been so poor for Darren Waller and the Giants.
I'm looking up what they gave up for him. I don't see it here.
I'm pretty certain it was a fourth-round pick. It was the pick they got from the Chiefs in exchange for Kadarius Toney. I know that.
He'll be 32, though, at the beginning of next season. Like that's
what, that was always your thing. Like, and again,
it's not this foundational player.
That doesn't bother me relative to the price paid. I mean, if they had traded a second-round pick for him, then yeah, like, I mean, let's really get upset. But like,
my thing with that was, like, they acted like he was, like, their A.J. Brown or their Tyreek. Like, this is the move to unlock Daniel Jones, like, you know.
He had that 20-yard reception in, like, a clutch moment. You know what I mean? Like, that player does exist, like, at least in a theoretical sense. But, I mean, you have to know better. Like, you cannot just let that clock – and, in fact – that after he, you know, and again, I fully empathize and understand he's hurt, but then he's, you know, after he takes forever to get up, then he's calling for a substitution to be made. Just stand up, man. Just stand up and let Tyrod Taylor spike the ball. I mean, that, I don't know fully what it wasted, but that had to have wasted like 12 seconds for the Giants all total.
It was a third round pick. It was actually number 100 overall. So it's, a top 100 pick. It's like, it's not nothing.
Was it a comp pick?
I think it was the pick they got for Kadarius Toney.
I literally just said those words for the audience. I literally just said that, like, right now, like, literally 1 minute ago. The audience
It's not even just the pick thing, though. It's also they signed him to a 3-year $51 million deal. Like, it's not even like, hey, you got him and he's on a nice contract. You gave him a new contract, too, just this past year. And, like, he's only getting older, so they're going to have to deal with that in the future. Not great.
I mean, I've acknowledged that it's not been a great thing. That was just a really bad moment for them overall. And it's unfortunate that he got hurt. I obviously, you know, hope he's all right. But I mean, man, that's just
also he gets hurt a lot. That's what happens in his career.
Are we ready now? I mean, the Commanders. Cool, you covered against the Jets, made me look smart. So
I mean, it's clear that Jacoby Brissett should have been playing earlier this year if they wanted to be competitive, which was not fully the goal. But this idea too that they literally Rivera came out and like crowned Sam Howell as the quarterback of the future, which is funny because he's not even going to be there, but for them to be so confident that they found their guy, and I don't think they are going to be ultimately after the season, clearly, especially after he's been benched twice and outperformed But also Commanders fans are acting like that too. It's like, he's the guy. He's definitely, he's not the guy.
Well, there was the, like, I wouldn't say 5 minutes. It was like 20 minutes where he was leading the league in passing. Although he, at the time, they hadn't had their bye, you know, like most teams have, at least most like contending.
And also they were down a lot, so they had to pass a lot.
I mean, I don't like fault them for that. I mean, I think, again, I said this last week and you rolled your eyes, and I recognize what the Bears paid and then the contract they paid. But like, if I was a Commanders fan, I'd be like, dude, we let Montez Sweat go. Like, he is, you know, he looks like a foundational piece for the Bears moving forward, like in a way that Darren Waller hasn't, at least to this point, for the Giants. And again, it was a high price that the Bears had to pay, and they gave him the big time contract. But like, there's a legitimate return on investment very early on for Chicago. And I think you would have to be a little bit panicked about that if you're a Washington fan right now. It's the proverbial, sorry, like, you know, we could trade Montez Sweat for this pick, and maybe that pick will become a player as good as Montez Sweat. You know what I mean? Like, it's
the family guy boat thing.
Yeah, like it's that.
What about did you see the report that Josh Harris potentially gonna hire some Philadelphia people to lead the Commanders in their next iteration? Because he has the Philadelphia connections.
Okay.
There's a report from CBS about that. So it doesn't impact the teams at all. There's no relation, but you might poach someone from the Eagles front office in part because there's a connection to being in Philadelphia.
Oh no. And you, like, I hope you'll make it through this, Brandon. I really do. So
anyway. Not connected whatsoever. Zero impact.
The odds currently playoffs to win the NFC East, and these are courtesy of our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook. Philadelphia Eagles -475, Dallas Cowboys +380. Mm-hmm. You obviously have been in the chaos of the game. Are you well caught up on what the Cowboys need to win the division?
Well, let's start with the Eagles, because really it's up to them. If the Eagles win out, obviously they win the division. That is win the most out, simple.
Or any combination of two.
The Eagles' magic number right now is two. Yes.
Yeah. Any Cowboys loss.
Simple way to put it.
Or Eagles win counts towards that number. So the Eagles could theoretically be NFC East champions as soon as Sunday evening if Dallas loses on Saturday night to Detroit, and then Philadelphia beats Arizona on Sunday. Right. So what I think is interesting, well, let's get through the division first, please. Mm-hmm. So the Cowboys' magic number is three. Any Eagles loss but against the Cardinals on Sunday or against the Giants next week, and they have to win out. Now we are past the point where the strength of victory tiebreaker could come into play. That is no longer a thing. What the like reason for Dallas winning the division would be if, assuming they won out, if Philly lost to Arizona, it would come down to record within the conference. And obviously if Philly lost to the Giants, it would be the immediate tiebreaker, which is record or the second tiebreaker, division. Which is divisional record.
Yeah.
Just so we're understood of the kind of particulars of it all. So the Eagles are what against the Cardinals? What's the opening line?
I haven't seen it on DraftKings. I've been seeing different numbers floating around. I think it's around like 8.5, 9.5, 10.5. I've seen all of those from different places. I'm going to check it while you're talking right now.
They still do not have it, DraftKings, at this moment in time. But oh, no, they do. Sorry. It's 11.
It's 11. Yeah. Wow. It's up to Eagles minus 11.
Well, they were 14-point favorites against it. This is... I'm not happy. I would have obviously loved if the Eagles had already lost this game. But if Jonathan Gannon is the person to deliver the kill shot, it would be so funny. And to your point, obviously, with like all the defensive like woes and whatnot. So that would be really, 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 really funny. So obviously rooting for that. What I kind of wanted to get to was your concerns and everyone's concerns about the Cowboys on the road are completely fair, right? Like, and by the way, the Cowboys have and the Eagles too, I believe, clinched the 5 seed at worst. I think Philly obviously numerically has more wins than the Rams or Seahawks can achieve. Dallas has the tiebreaker over both of them because the Cowboys beat them both. So
Eagles also beat the Rams. Yeah.
Well, but if, the Seahawks in a 3-team tiebreaker, like if Philly had whatever, like hypothetically been tied with the Rams and Seahawks, it's conference record. So I don't know if they, because they didn't beat the Seahawks, obviously. So, but anyway, it's either the 2 seed or 5 seed for Dallas. I know it's still possible that Philly could be the 1 seed or the 3 seed. because
what a dumb thing. And also, if the Eagles had just held on against the Seahawks, and I know it doesn't work like this, because, you know, they could have lost some of those other close games, but I'm just saying they had control of that game. If they had beaten the Seahawks, they would be in control right now of the one seed. Like, that's so stupid. They would be a Giants win and a Cardinals win away right now. It flipped that order. Cardinals win and then Giants win away from clinching the one seed and playing terrible football.
Because the Niners lost on Monday. Right. Just to be clear, like, they needed that, and it literally just happened. But
so it's still possible, because like you said, it's possible that if the 49ers, who are now banged up, lose to either the Commanders, which unlikely, or the Rams, which that's quite possible, with the Rams, you know, potentially having playoff implication to play for, that they could be the one seed. There's a 14% chance, according to New York Times. That's crazy.
So for the record, if Cowboys fans don't know this, this is part of what makes Saturday's game so interesting, is the Lions are in
control. Yes, they would also be the Lions.
As the NFC North winners, now the Lions are in control of the two seed. If Detroit wins out, then the two seed is theirs, even if the Eagles win out. That's how Philadelphia would be the three seed. So if Dallas beats Detroit on Sunday, and we had been kind of forecasting this for a while, it helps Philadelphia out from the perspective of having the opportunity to control their destiny towards the two seed. Although if Dallas were to beat Detroit on Saturday and then Philadelphia were to lose, say on Sunday, then that would put Dallas in position for the two seed, at least to control their destiny for the two seed. So obviously lots of things potentially at play. Before I go any further, what are you rooting for on Saturday?
I mean, I think you're rooting for the right thing. To me, is the optimal scenario in terms Eagles. Of like getting the highest seed as you possibly can, because that's ultimately like the biggest goal. To me, it's a win-win. I think like either outcome, I'm not going to be mad about, to be honest. But yeah, go Cowboys on this week for sure. Beat the Lions. Go ahead. Help out the Eagles. We'd love to see it.
I would almost be rooting for an Eagles win if the Cowboys lost, because as it stands right now, if they were to both win, Dallas has to, because they're going to play the same time next week, and it's going to be exactly like last year was, where they were not able to manufacture their own bye. Now, Philadelphia obviously might not have the bye either, but I would be rooting for an Eagles win on Sunday if Dallas lost on Saturday, because that would lock them in, and you know, it would almost force them to rest players, or at least not play Tyron Smith next week or whatever, things like that. But I wanted to get back to the road thing. So we acknowledge and we agree that like the road thing is at the very least a thing. Like, even if you find it to be annoying or silly or just a narrative, like, it's factual, it's fair. Like you can't hide from it at this point. Like, you're not playing as well on the road. That is objectively true. So despite that being the case, and despite Dallas being their overwhelming like likelihood for playoff seeding is the five seed. ESPN's projection that they released on Tuesday has Dallas with an 81% chance at finishing as the five seed, and only an 18% chance at finishing as the two seed. And DraftKings, they don't do anything like that, but still, they have Dallas as the third favorite to win the NFC, right behind Philly. So San Francisco's plus 100, Philly's plus 380, Dallas is plus 450. So right there behind the Eagles. And so my thought, or my question, again, I don't have like a point. I'm really just wanting to talk about this, is we all, like, the football world agrees that the Cowboys clearly have troubles on the road, yet they are more than likely going to have to play literally every game on the road in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And despite this, you know, perceived potential truth, all odds makers and ESPN's Football Power Index believe them to be a team worthy of, you know, reaching the NFC Championship game, and therefore winning games on the road, which happens to be the thing that plagues them the most. Again, and I'm going to write about this at Blog on the Boys, if anybody wants to go check that out, any Cowboys fans. ESPN's prediction on all this has the Cowboys with the second best chances in the NFC of reaching the Super Bowl. They've got San Francisco with a 52% chance, Dallas at 18, and Philadelphia at 16, Detroit all the way down at 8. So nobody believes in them. So, but like, I'm really just asking, because I find your opinion to be, you know, insightful. How can these things can't coexist? You get what I'm saying? Like, that Dallas would be perceived to be this great team in the playoffs that could win multiple road playoff games, when they can't win a game on the road in the regular season to save their life.
Well, I think it speaks to kind of the weakness of the field. I mean, no one's going to give the Lions, you know, they just haven't won a playoff game since 91. So no one's just assuming they can go into the playoffs
against the Cowboys
and go on a run.
I don't have to do that.
I didn't, but there you go. The 49ers, obviously, are a little bit less intimidating after. I still think, you know, they're clearly the best team in the NFC. I don't think anyone can argue that. And I think they're better than what they were last night. Like, I think, you know, That's the very worst version of them. I think they will be better. And I think if they play the Ravens again in the Super Bowl, it would be a much more competitive game. I feel pretty confident in that. But yeah, so I think part of that's just about the field. But again, I think it can't be like emphasized enough for the Cowboys to end the season with what, 3 out of 4 on the road, right?
Yeah. And next week's game on the road against Washington presents potentially different consequences, right? And we can't even define what they are right now, obviously, right? Like if this week it went entirely Dallas's way, it would be complete and total consequences, where if you win that game, you win the division, right? Mm-hmm. But if Dallas loses this week and Philly wins, then it's completely meaningless because you're locked into the 5 seed as mentioned. Mm-hmm. Or if both Dallas and Philly were to win this week, you would kind of have these half, you know, consequences like last year, where you'd be playing but you'd be scoreboard watching at the same time. So like, this Miami game, and I talked about this as well, was like their last opportunity to prove in a game of full consequence. And again, even then, they were already in the playoffs. You know what I mean? It wasn't like do or die, but it was still the last kind of simulation, if you will, of road conditions and consequences. And they failed. They failed 2 weeks in a row with everyone saying that they couldn't do this. And again, still, in spite of that, there's all these people who think that they can do it with all of the consequences on the line. It's weird.
Yeah, I'm going to keep betting against them on the road until they prove otherwise. I mean, even that first matchup against the Bucks, like, I'm not saying the Bucks. I mean, I feel very confidently it would be more of a game than it was last year, when that Bucks team was clearly just like, the Bucks didn't win the division last year as much as they kind of just
survived.
Lost it less than everyone. They were literally below 500. They were a terrible team. They just weren't as bad as every other bad team in the NFC South. This Bucks team right now, especially if they win this week, they can essentially wrap up the division this week by beating the Saints and really kind of just putting their stamp on it. I don't think they're a juggernaut, to be clear, but like, they could win a game. I think that's their ceiling. I think you could reasonably say their ceiling is one playoff win, especially at home. So yeah, I just don't really love the Cowboys having to go on a bunch of tough spots on the road there and continue to just grind out win after win. I don't think there's any benefit of the doubt that should be given to them, especially ultimately. And if they beat the Bucks, let's say, I mean, who are they playing at that point? They're probably playing the 49ers. Decent chance.
So that's what I wanted to get to right now. At current moment, after week 16, if the playoffs began, the Eagles would host the Seahawks, the Lions would host the Rams, the Matthew Stafford game that everybody wants to see, and the Cowboys would visit the Bucks. I think the favorites would be Philly, Detroit, and Dallas, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously. And I think it'd probably go chalk, although I've said this before, like, I think the Rams are very dangerous. Like, I do not want to see Dallas be the 2 seed and host the 7 seed Rams. That is my worst possible nightmare. So
they definitely have the best quarterback of any seven seed team.
They're the 6 seed presently, though.
Okay.
So
if they're the 7 seed, they have the best quarterback of any 7 seed ever, I'm pretty sure, in terms of like how they're performing right now.
But what's significant about them being the 6 seed is if Philly doesn't win or doesn't take the 2 seed, right? Because then it's Philly who would host them as the 3 seed. Mm-hmm. I don't like I wouldn't bet on the Rams against Detroit or Philly, but it would definitely be the like quote unquote upset that I would be shocked the least by.
So,
and that's what Dallas needs. Because everyone's right, afraid of San Francisco. Dallas needs one of the lower wild cards to find a way and send them, being the Cowboys, to Philly or Detroit in the division round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Or even host, like, if all three wildcard teams are to win for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you want to see the least? Who do you want the Eagles to see? Like,
I'm not even there yet. Like, I'm not there because that presupposes too much about the Eagles. Like, I need the Eagles to look not terrible right now, just against a bad team, for me to even care. Like, I don't care who they play right now. It's not about opponent. It's just about getting to this, get a good seed, actually play some good brand of football, and then I'll care. But right now, I honestly don't care. The Eagles can beat any team in the NFL, except maybe the 49ers, maybe the Ravens. They can also lose to any team in the NFL. That's where I feel about them right now.
I think we've like gotten past, we're like through the wall. We're no longer like bickering and arguing anymore, which I know are some people's, like, that's such a hit or miss thing as far as the mixologist. A lot of people really dig when we're just like at each other's throats, and a lot of people are like quipping children, you know what I mean? So whatever.
Divisive.
Because, right, it does feel like that juice is doing a tickle on my throat. it does feel like the Cowboys and Eagles are kind of fighting for second place right now. Like who gets to be the like team that goes to Santa Clara for the championship game just to lose, you know, 37-13?
No one. It feels like I was going to come on earlier in the show and say, like, who wants to win the NFCs? No one apparently wants to win it. It's kind of just, again, who's losing it less right now in terms of how things are going to end the season. Yeah, I do agree that, you know, it's still the 49ers, very much the 49ers. Even if the 49ers fall out of control of the one seed, it's still, I still think it's their conference to lose.
And that's where, to your point about like going to San Francisco, in a weird way, I think, and one of our writers, Danny Phantom, made this argument prior to the Eagles-Niners game. He was like, we should consider rooting for Philadelphia to win this game because it probably sets up better for Dallas to go to Philly in a divisional round matchup than San Francisco. Like, yeah, you know, sense. And so, right. And so like, if Dallas were to lose on Saturday night, I would definitely be rooting for Philly to take the one seed because as the five seed, it seems likely that Dallas is going to head there. But again, it's a weird twist of turns because, you know, you think everything's going to go chalk and I don't remember the line, obviously. And it bums me out that the 2022 Vikings are still catching strays from people. Like people are like, oh, the Eagles suck. They're just like last year's Vikings. Like, let the Vikings be, man. Like it was a year ago at this point in time. But if the Vikings had held on to win that game, Dallas would have gone to Philadelphia in the division around. And look, obviously last year's Eagles were a monster, but I felt much better about their chances. And some of that's just like division rivalry. And obviously they'd beaten them without Hurts, granted, you know, a month prior. But I mean, if the Giants wrecked that because the Giants managed to pull that game off, they sent Dallas to San Francisco in the divisional round. And so like, we could sit here, we could be like, oh, well, I think the favorites would win. But like, all it takes is the Rams or Seahawks to pull this thing off and throw the NFC playoff picture into total and complete chaos.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Do you have a playoff picture take? Because I feel like I've offered a few.
Bigger take, larger take.
Any size take. Any quality.
I think the Lions are being a little bit discounted more than they should be. And I get it again, because I said they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt after being a franchise that hasn't won since 91. I know that's not like the failures of all the other teams don't necessarily belong on this iteration of the team, but it's just hard to merely assume that it's going to happen when you don't see it happen for so long. But I think they're kind of rounding into form a little bit and they've been flawed. Like, look, you know, the Vikings had a chance at the end of that game. But I do think they have, if we're talking about vibes, I think they definitely have vibes working for them. And if it's, you know, a matter of, like, I brought this up on last show, like, is it your year? That doesn't mean you win the championship just because it's your year. Like, does this have the feel of it? And they do have that kind of feel. So I think the Lions might be being a little bit discounted. I think a lot of people are going to pick against them in that first playoff game. And I get it, again. But I think they might be more threatening than people think.
More people will definitely pick against them if the Rams are their draw. Because people will fall for, they'll be like, I think Matthew Stafford, you know, whatever. They'll just kind of fall for it. But do you know the Cowboys line against Detroit on Saturday?
Yeah, because I looked at it. It was, when I saw it, I think it was -4.
They opened at -5.5, the Cowboys. That's what it was late Sunday evening. And then that grew to 6. It is currently 6.5 in favor of the Cowboys.
Obviously. Yeah, like I think that's disrespectful. I know the Cowboys have been great at home, but I think the Lions are going to make it a game. This is like you're saying they're not even going to make it a game almost. It's like a field goal kind of game. I think the Cowboys should be favored by like 4.5 or 4.
I mean, for the most part, they aren't games at AT&T Stadium, which is weird and, you know, whatever. And, you know, you can't, like, count on that. And the only team who made it a game. Team,
this current version of the Lions, I think, is the best team that the Cowboys are facing at home this year.
I mean, the Seahawks gave them the best, you know, game that they'd had at home. And that was a game, so to speak, obviously, they didn't cover. But and they trailed for the first time against Seattle in their building, obviously. But I guess that means it's time to pick. Should we just pick games? Should we just do that and get pick songs and get out of here? Is that what we want to do?
Yeah.
Is that the
we
move?
Should go in order, right? Because that very much matters. In like chronological order, that very much is relevant this week when the Cowboys are playing on Saturday.
It matters because it's sacred. Like the order that we do is sacred around here. But to your point, it just so happens to matter consequentially with regards to the divisional race. So, okay, Cowboys, as we just noted, 6.5-point favorites against Detroit on Saturday night with Jimmy Johnson going into the Ring of Honor. At long last,
I'll take the Cowboys. I think the Lions cover, but I think the Cowboys win because I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt at home. I know I said it's kind of contradicts what I just said in terms of I think the Lions are going to be not as feared as they should be. I think people are going to view them as the fourth best team at best in the playoffs when I think they might be a little bit better than that. Certainly with the Eagles slipping and the Cowboys also not looking their best right now. But I do think the Cowboys win, Lions cover. So there you go.
Not that this is what matters, but this is Dak's last chance to remotely put himself in the MVP running. Like, there's a world where, like, he goes off on Saturday night and they have this big, impressive win, and then Philly loses on Sunday, which opens the door of control for the division, and Baltimore looks bad against Miami.
I was going to say, like, everyone's ready to give Lamar the MVP. It's like...
You were! You've been saying, what do you mean, everyone? That's the song you've been singing.
After last night, I'm saying, like, everyone's like, just call it. Now, it's not time to call it, because then what happens if he loses to Tua and he doesn't play well and Tua plays great? Like, is that... And then who's the MVP?
That's what I'm not like saying this would guarantee it to your point, but like, again, if that hypothetical unfolded and that this game is in prime time on a Saturday night, you know what I mean? Like with all the like Jimmy Johnson stuff and whatever, like it's his last chance to make a legitimate push. That's maybe the best way to put it.
Is this like the weakest MVP? I mean, obviously I don't know ever in terms of way back, but it feels like in a long time, like who is the MVP? I don't think it's Lamar right now, but I mean, again, assuming in the scenario where, yeah, the Dolphins do win and he doesn't look great, then who is it? I don't know.
I mean, for what it's worth, DraftKings has Christian McCaffrey.
It's Miles Garrett.
Christian McCaffrey is second in odds. So, like, that's, I believe, the highest a non-quarterback has been yet, which is reflective of what you just said. Miles Garrett is second in defensive player of the year behind Michael
Parsons. Give him MVP. I mean, I think if there's a season to give it to a defensive player, I mean, he's been incredible.
Or to just a non-quarterback. Again,
and like that Browns team, there's no way they should be. I mean, people are, like, joking, saying they give it to Flacco. Obviously, it's not going to happen. And he's been fine, but.
I'll pick the Cowboys. And suppose I'll lay the points. I mean, well, and that would be really frustrating. Like if it pulled, you know what I mean? It'd be like, y'all, and it would feed the like fear of not being able to play a home game. You know what I mean? Right. In the playoffs. So of course that's what they're going to do to us.
The Eagles then are in control of the 2 seed at this point.
At that point, yes. The Commanders, cause we have to pick this and they do play a role here. They are 13.5 point home underdogs. To the San Francisco 49ers, the Chase Young revenge game.
If the Commanders play Jacoby Brissett, I think the Commanders cover. I do. The 49ers are banged up at coming off of that Ravens game. And I also think the ego's bruised a little bit there.
Short week travel for San Francisco across the country.
We saw how the 49ers kind of went through that rough stretch earlier this year. Those losses seemed to kind of like weigh on them. They were stacking. It wasn't like, okay, that was a one-off week. We can put it behind us. That didn't happen until what? They had their bye and they came back against Jacksonville. Like they had that chance to reset. I think it's possible that ego's bruised a little bit. Again, I haven't seen the quarterback situation, but with Jacoby Brissett looking competent, I think the Commanders can cover in this game, but lose.
I'm with you. I think so. But I could also, I don't feel very, I'm going to make that my pick, like cover, but lose, but I don't feel confident.
I reserve the right to flip my pick to 49ers.
Well, everyone should listen to us on the SB Nation NFL show on Friday, right, where we will make our official picks. The Giants are hosting the Rams and are 6-point underdogs while doing so. Not as seismic of an effect on the NFC playoff picture that they can, you know, have, but they like, whether they win or lose this game could or would impact whether Dallas or Philly sees the Rams in the wild card round or how they set the Rams up to potentially upset the Niners. I mean, again, everything is unknown at this point, but you get my point.
How many points? What's the line?
Six.
For this game?
Six.
And the Rams are at home?
The Rams are on the road coming off of the Thursday Night Football win mini bye last week against the Saints. Mm.
Okay, so I think the Eagles kind of need the Rams to not win this game. Or not clinch, because then that gives the Rams motivation to play. I think if the Rams win this game and the Seahawks lose this week, then the Rams would clinch a playoff spot, thus, and also have the tiebreaker over the Seahawks. So I guess would clinch maybe the 6 seed potentially.
Yeah, I think that's right. For what it's worth, are playing the Steelers at home. Hmm. They're 3.5 point favorites. The Seahawks are.
Interesting. Yeah. So in any case, the that scenario would mean the Rams don't have anything to play for in week 18 against the Niners, who the Eagles need to, you know, see the 49ers either lose this week to the Commanders or, I mean, both would be great, sure, but at least one of those two games. So, but I mean, the Giants are terrible. They're a terrible team. They weren't close to winning as much as the Eagles were close to losing it and blowing it on their end. I do think Tyrod gives them probably more of a chance.
I'm taking the Rams. I'm laying the points.
But I'm going to take the Rams as well and lay the points.
The Eagles, as mentioned, wow, this was weird. DraftKings listed these. Oh, never mind. I read this wrongly. So this is a noon game. So Cowboys play Saturday night, and then all three NFC East teams play Sunday at noon. So we'll have our NFC East answers at least as early as
this is the third 1 o'clock game for the Eagles this year.
Jonathan Gannon's revenge. Philly laying 11 points at home.
Cardinals points, Eagles win.
That's going to be my official pick, but kind of the way Mookie said that the way the Seahawks played in Dallas gave him confidence that they could beat the Eagles ultimately wound up being true, granted for completely different reasons than he forecasted. The way that the Eagles almost threw away the game against mm-hmm. the Giants, I wouldn't say like my confidence on this is 51% or higher, but it definitely rose that the Eagles will drop one of these last two games. You know what I'm saying? Like it might've been like at a 30%, you know, before Sunday, and now it might be like at a 40%. It's still, you know, the less likely or least likely thing, but I definitely feel better about that, even with one fewer opportunity, if that makes sense.
Cardinals have the 32nd DVOA defense. So if the Eagles offense can't really cook this team, that would be pretty not good. I believe Cardinals are also pretty banged up, right?
Yeah, I think they. Right. I think while we've been talking, I think they just placed an offensive lineman on injured reserve. I can't.
Yeah.
So
I think that I can't give again. I always like to talk about benefit of the doubt. The Eagles deserve none the way they're playing right now, but the Cardinals also deserve it less. So that's why I'm taking same thing I said with the Giants last week. I'll take the points because there's no reason to believe in the Eagles covering, but I think they will win simply because their opponent is just truly a lot worse.
So I'm looking one last thing up here. Because I'm curious to see like what the Cardinals like how, if they've been kind of peaking or fading. So
I feel like there's a scenario where like the Eagles go to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl as like the least accomplished Super Bowl winning team ever. Like they just keep doing this every week. It's like every week they play a terrible game and then they somehow win and no one feels good about it. And it would just be very fun. And I don't think it's actually the most likely thing, obviously, with how they're playing. I think the most likely thing is they lose in the playoffs, but it would be very fitting and funny that they like win a championship and like obviously people would feel good about it because it's the goal. At the same time, be like, that team wasn't even good. They won a championship, they weren't even a good team.
What was week 10 for the Cardinals? Can you look that up, please? I think that was
obviously when Tyler came back.
I think it was.
They played the Falcons, I think, in his first game back.
So looking at FTN Fantasy's weekly DVOA. I mean, prior to that, outside of the game against the Cowboys, obviously, they were horrible. I mean, like, every week was a negative figure. Although, again, the week three game was 74.7%. It's just amazing how poor Dallas played. But have you found week 10 for the Cardinals? And
yeah, verified? They played the – that was the Kyler return game that was in Arizona.
And
they
so,
beat the lowly Falcons by okay. 2 points.
So they had a 15.6 positive DVOA rating. What was week 11? Was it the Pittsburgh game?
Week 11, they were at the Texans, and they lost that one by five points. That was
negative 8.7. Week 12 was a blowout.
Rams loss in at home in Arizona.
That was awful. But so since week – I mean, I would say, like, they've been really bad.
The Steelers, but, like
– They had a six – that was their last positive weekly DVOA grade. It was a 6.5% of week 13. Then they were on bye. And they got smoked, minus 47.7. Last week was only a minus 14.6.
Justin Fields, terrible.
Yeah, and that's on par, as far as last week is concerned, with the Packers, who won, by the way. And they obviously were horrible on defense. So, I mean, in an objective sense, this is among the best that they have been this season. But that just speaks to like how bad they've been for most of them, if that makes sense. So, you never know. Let's do songs. Rachelle, I'm pulling up our message with her. She said her exact words were, "I'll wrap up holiday season with Soul Holidays by Sounds of Blackness." Boom. Yes, I mean, I don't know if I want to put a Christmas song. I mean, I know that Christmas is past, but like, you know.
Well, not, I mean, technically Christmas Day has, but some would say the Christmas season continues until, I forget, I don't know, depending on what religion or whatever you want to go by. What do you, what's your song?
No, what's your song?
No, I want to hear your song.
What's your song?
Okay. I am going with my most played song this year on Apple Music. I don't, you know, you and I are both Apple Music people. We don't use Spotify. So not my Spotify Wrapped, but the Apple Music equivalent of that was by the Smashing Pumpkins. It is Tonight, Tonight. It's a really good song. And I really think it was thematic to me for the year 2023. I made a New Year's resolution and stuck to it for all of 2023. At least as I tried to. Obviously, maybe I fell short at certain points, but I said to myself, I'm going to be more decisive in 2023. I'm going to make more confident decisions. And I think that helped me as a person grow my confidence as a whole, which is nice because that's something, admittedly, I've struggled with. It's a constant battle. It's not something that I feel like comes as naturally to me as other people, which isn't always good, too, especially in my line of work, because, you know, I have to come on here, deliver confident takes. Can't be Mr. Fancy Fensterton. That's not fun. No one cares about that. Anyone can say, oh, you know, there's this, and then there's that. Anyone can say that, look at both sides of it. Sometimes you have to come in with a take and deliver it and stick with it. So I think everyone should try to aspire to believe in themselves more. And obviously that's not an easy thing to do. There's a lot of good resources out there for that. But there's a line in Tonight Tonight that says, believe in me as I believe in you. And I think the song was written in perspective of the writer. Like he was kind of saying that to himself, like, you know, like believe in yourself. So I think that's a good positive message we can end the year on. I'd recommend that as a New Year's resolution for anyone. Believe in yourself because you're probably worth it.
Wow. I wish I'd gone before you because that's a really difficult thing to follow. That's awesome. I really hate everything about the Eagles, but I'm a big fan of Brandon Lake Otten. And so really pleased and happy for you and your growth individually. And here's to 2024 and even more confident decisions because you are worth it. So good for you developing some confidence. And again, cheers to that rolling over into 2024 and beyond. I always find resolutions to be funny because it's like, well, what do you do in 2024 in this case? Like, does it stop? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm going to try to stick with it. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think it's just like a device. Just like something to get the ball rolling.
That is a very, very cool kind of just overall motto and creed and idea and disposition. And so I'm glad that you had a song that kind of lined up with that ideology. Again, I really wish I'd gone first.
I gave you a chance. I said that you should go.
I thought about going with a New Year's song, but the only one I could think about was it's not even a New Year's song. But have you heard the song 2012 by Jay Sean?
No.
So he's kind of like singing it from the perspective of remember when everyone thought the world was going to end.
I was going to say was it December 22nd or 23rd?
I think it was 20. Oh, wasn't the 25th? But
21st maybe.
Yeah, so like whatever that was, like was it the Mayan calendar?
And it did, by the way. It did that
day. But so like he was writing a song, and there's a YouTube video of like the kind of behind the scenes or whatever.
21st.
And thank you. And so he's like, they want to call it 2012. And so the chorus, he says, we're going to party like it's the end of the world. We're going to party like it's 2012. And I remember like in the like behind the scenes video, he's like, everyone, he's British. So he's like, everyone's going to be bumping this on New Year's Eve, whatever. Which takes me to my question. Do you like this year, do you call it New Year's Eve 2023 or New Year's Eve 2024?
I think you would say 2023.
I think so, because it's the eve in 2023. I recognize it's the eve like of 2024, but it's not.
But maybe maybe that's wrong. But you would say Christmas Eve, right, for the day after.
No, I'm saying like it's New Year's
it's
Day
eve 20 of Christmas,
but it's New Year's Day 2024. It's New Year's Eve 2023. Like, which if you like understand what that implies, means you're leaving 2023 into 2024. But that's not my song, nevertheless. Although
don't get the listeners started on the years thing again.
Let's use hashtag mixtape, but the E is the middle of the Venn diagram for V or for Eve. So mixtape, you know, that's the hashtag we want to use to get your thoughts on this. My song is kind of a New Year's song, but I've always associated it with Christmas and just this time of year. It is the song 525,600 Minutes from the Rent soundtrack, the movie. That's my favorite version of it.
I never saw that movie.
It's excellent. Obviously, I've never seen the show, but the movie is incredible. The whole soundtrack is great. And when I saw this, and they said it's the opening number to the movie and the show in general, but I remember I was like in high school, and I remember being like, that's not right. And like just kind of like doing the math and being like, well, there you go. That really is like a year. So it's a great song, kind of about the perspective of what a year offers and how it can change. As the second act of the movie starts, they sing like a twist on it, and they talk about how you can measure a year in cups of coffee, in laughter, in all sorts of things. And so while a year is technically and literally 525,600 minutes, a year is whatever you define it to be. And so I hope whatever our listeners define this one to be, whether they spent 525,600 minutes with us or not, which would be impossible because we didn't record for the entire year. But I hope that they were able to measure it in whatever makes them happy or whatever brings them peace, love, and joy.
The next time we'll be talking together, it will be 2024. So how about that?
Then Brandon, count us down. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Happy New Year. Sync this up to Happy New Year.
The Current podcast is back with an exciting new season featuring marketing executives from the world's most influential brands. Tune in to hear what's driving conversation in the fast-moving world of digital advertising with unique insights from brands as diverse as Hilton, Instacart, Moderna, Major League Soccer, and more. And in this presidential election season, The Current explores what a national political advertiser like the National Republican Senatorial Committee and a major CPG brand like Hershey can learn from each other. Listen in and subscribe to The Current at thecurrent.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
First thing in the morning, as soon as you wake up, the to-do list starts.
Does the car need gas? Hopefully those leftovers are still good.
Why did I get CC'd on? Call mom?
No.
You can't escape the to-do list, but you can make the most of your me time with a relaxing shower using Method hair care products. Try Pure Peace Volumizing, Simply Nourish Moisturizing, or Daily Zen Shampoo and Conditioner for daily use. All formulated with long-lasting fragrances and are safe for color-treated hair. Reconnect with the best version of yourself. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower.